These demo requirements for 3 minutes. Give everybody a fair chance. Thanks. Please help me welcome Stevie B.
All right.
We got 2 chairs right here. Anybody wants? We got 2 chairs right here. No? I kind of like it. You know, I had always pictured that mine would be up in lights. I didn't know it was going to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. What is going on here, Richie? What is this? I feel like I'm at a club.
Come on now.
It's crazy, that neon light. Basket's been passed. Justin, Danny, come on down. We got seats. Let's get set. And once the train starts, we want to just keep it going. Hey, Tony. So this is staying on? Okay, good. Good with it. Oh, my Lord. Father God, thank you. Thank you for tonight. Thank you for laughter. And thank you for this room. Thank you for the gift of recovery. Lord, we ask you to transform this room into your meeting house. Open up our ears. Help us to stay awake. Lord, you know we've had a long week. Help the message not to just get into our head, but into our heart. We're so very grateful that you rescued us when we were unrescuable. Once again, I'd like to ask you to transform this room tonight. And we pray all this in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B. And I'm a grateful, joyful man in recovery. And I'm a member of the Westside Men's Group.
Nice!
Whew. And it is a different feeling with the neon behind you. It's like, a lot of you guys weren't here last week, but some of you were. But when I relapsed, I was big into karaoke. And I know some of you heard it, but most of you didn't. A lot of you hadn't. I was really big into karaoke. And I was drinking and I was taking other stuff. And we used to go out to karaoke bars here in Hollywood and actually sing behind a lot of this kind of stuff. And when I sobered up and then I did my first CD for my wife for Valentine's Day, I was a month sober. And I had really thought I was a fantastic singer. I mean, we used to go to the karaoke bar and just, you know, pay the guy the whole night so we could just stay there. And when everyone would be done, we'd just be singing for hours, me and Nikki D. And, I mean, he never told me I was a bad singer. He was drunk, too. We were both drunk. So we're like, you're the best. No, man, you're the best. You gotta cut an album sometime. Last week we were talking about step 6. How's the volume in here, guys? Can you hear it? Because I really don't feel like yelling. Can we bring this up a little bit, Richie? Tonight I want to. It's about humility, and I really want to just keep it. Ooh. Wow. Okay, how's that? Good? Good? Because I really don't feel like yelling. So last week we were talking about step 6, being entirely ready to have God remove all of our defects of character. We did a little bit of a synopsis last week. And we talked about coming in and then coming to believe and then making a decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God. You know, just want to remind us that making a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God is a lot more than 3 frogs on a log. One frog jumps. One frog makes a decision. You know, I understand that that's a whole simplistic way, but what I want to focus on is that making a decision to have God run our lives, regardless of where we're at in our relationship with God. See, making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God doesn't mean that we have a total understanding of God. And I don't think anybody in here, from Tony on down, and nobody in here has a total understanding of God. God's ways are not our ways. If we could figure out God, what kind of God would that be? So when they say in the 12 and 12, after 15 years of writing the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, now you can now choose a God of your own understanding, I don't want to choose the God of my own understanding. Because my limited knowledge of what God could be is limited to what this is. And I don't want Stevie B's idea of God running the universe. My life, my wife's life, my family's life. I don't want him running anything. As a matter of fact, the guy that came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't want him ever getting in control of my life again. So I certainly don't want him picking out the concept of God. I want to just believe in God. I don't have to define him in step 3. All I need to do is make a decision to turn my life and my will over. You guys good? So that's what I do. I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And then in step 4, because I've made that decision, it says I have to write down my character defects, my resentments, my hurts, my hang-ups, the stuff that I did to other people, the stuff that I don't want anyone in the universe to know, let alone another human being, let alone Jerry Bear, my sponsor. I don't want him to have any. I don't want any man to have anything over on me. I don't want any man to have something over on me that they could just pull out at any time and go, see? But because I made a decision to have God run my life, the next step is step 4. I need to start writing it down. Because when I went to step 4, I didn't want to write it down. I just wanted to tell it to Jerry Bear. And he said, no, you're going to actually write it down. So I actually had to write it down. And then in step 5, I carried it over to Jerry, over to the West Coast. And I sat with him, Nate. I sat with him and I said, here's my 5th step. And I was about to give him the sex harms caused others. And I knew this was going to be a big one. I'm like, here it goes, Jerry. And he was sleeping. He was sleeping during the 5th step. And what that told me is it wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? I had to wake him up. I'm like, Jerry, I'm about to tell you the sex harms caused others. And so it wasn't that interesting is what I'm saying. There's no sin since the beginning of man that's any different than anyone else in here. Some people had feathers on their sin. Other people had, neon lights behind their sin. It's all the same. I'm sure for the men and women in here that have heard hundreds and hundreds of 5th steps, it pretty much all comes down to basically same thing. Self-will, run riot. Us taking our will back. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about pagels. We're going to talk about the 7 deadly sins. You know, I was a little nervous about ever using the word sins in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that the big book actually had the word sins. So I always used to say character defects. I would never say that word. Because one thing out of respect of Alcoholics Anonymous is I always like to keep everything that I share from the podium only what they have in the textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't like to let any of my religious beliefs or what I'm studying right now come in the way of the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I got to page 12, and it talks about having our sins removed root and branch. And I call my wife, right, sweetheart? I call my wife. I'm like, Sandra, you got to see this. It says sins, and it says root and branch. So now I can say sins as much as I want. So it's the 7 deadly sins. Tony's checking to make sure it's on page 12. 12 or 13, Tony. 12 or 13. But it's right there. It's right in 12, 13, or 14. Right there. 15? It could be 15, yeah. Right around there. 12 through 15. Check it out. It says that I would now have my newfound friend, which was God, remove my sins from me root and branch, and that I would have a new freedom. Man, I loved that when I heard that. But how do we have our sins removed from us root and branch if we don't know what they are? First of all, it's almost impossible to identify them if you have them. So we're going to go over some of them. We're going to go over the pagels tonight, the 7 deadly sins. What else are we going to talk about tonight? Michael, good to see you. We're going to talk about being on the mountaintop. We're going to talk about alcoholism. And I had a tough day from 4 o'clock yesterday to What time is it? 15 minutes ago. I had a tough day I had a 24-hour period. And during that 24-hour period, I spoke to my sponsor. I spoke to Bobby. I spoke to Mason. I spoke to Eddie. I spoke to a bunch of guys in this room. And Mason said to me, well, what's wrong? What's actually going on with you? And you know what I told him? I have alcoholism. I have alcoholism. Sometimes there's nothing going on. Sometimes it's just alcoholism. You know, for the people to say that they've recovered from this seemingly hopeless state of body, good for you. That's fantastic. That's awesome. I haven't. From time to time, I have serious mental issues. And not all the time I can put my finger on it. So in the last 24 hours, I had alcoholism. I had the symptoms of alcoholism. I like to say that I'm in recovery. I don't want to identify myself anymore. It's a new thing, so I'm having trouble getting it out since I've been saying I'm an alcoholic for 18 years. But it's a new thing. I want to start saying I'm Stevie B, and I'm recovering. So I'm going to be trying that on as weeks go on, trying to get that going. Because I am in recovery, and also that alcoholism is not who I am. It's something I suffer from. And when I turn it over to God and I ask Him to handle it for me and I put on the armor of God, I suffer from it a lot less. But my length of time in sobriety does not equate to where I'm going to be at with my alcoholism. And because I have good friends that are sober many, many years, I realize it has nothing to do with sanity either. Because those guys are as wacko as anybody. But I have newcomer guys that I sponsor that are more sober than my 18-year-old friends. So it means that we have alcoholism, not wasm. It means it's something that goes on today, or addiction, whatever the word is. We do suffer from a disease that centers in our mind, at least I do. And so yesterday, did you guys ever see the Titanic? Well, yesterday I was Leonardo DiCaprio, and I was like, I'm on top of the world! And I was at the store with my wife, and I was like, I'm too blessed to be stressed. And I'm not going to be blessed, stressed, and I'm blessed. And I'm walking, and I'm like, I'm on top of the world. But in the Titanic, the ship sinks. You know, he's up there, and he's on top of the thing, and he's got the wind blowing in. And then a couple hours, and then 1 hour later, they're on the bottom of the ocean. And people are jumping off. That's life. That's life. 1 minute you're on top of the world, the next minute you're under the ship. Trying to get up to the surface. Dead people all around you. That's the way life is. I don't go to meeting tonight. I didn't come to the meeting because I was going to drink tonight. I came to the meeting because I don't know when the boat sinks. Sometimes I'm on top of the world. I feel like $1 million. I was walking around the store yesterday on top of the world. An hour later, I was like, I hate myself. Where does that come from? Is that bipolar? Is that alcoholism? I don't know what it is. But let me tell you something. Guess what I knew? I knew I was going to have to be at a meeting today. As a matter of fact, I was going to be at two meetings, but I missed one of them because of work this morning. And it's all gone. It's all gone. See, I have a meeting scheduled today. I know where I'm going to be at Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday's an off night. I go dancing with Eddie and my wife and Mark and Marcel. We have salsa classes right now. That's, you know, painful. That's tough. Salsa class. That's not easy. Salsa class is not easy. But that's date night, and that's what my wife picks, so I'm happy to do it. And then Saturday, I'm here with you guys. And when I'm not here with you guys in 5 weeks from now, on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., every other Saturday, we're going to be going up to Boca. And to be around guys with long-term sobriety. I like to be around people that came before me, but they're actually working it. Because just long-term sobriety, and I know that my good friend Eddie told me a couple weeks ago, he said, Steve, make sure you're careful when you talk about guys with long-term sobriety and gals, and you don't give them the respect that's due to them. I do give them the respect that's due to them. I'm just saying that length of sobriety is not the only thing I'm looking for. Right. Because I know people that haven't gambled in 45 years, but I still don't want to hang out with them. And I also know people that are sober 15 years, 5 years, 4 years, and I know a couple of them over here that are sober months, and I love hanging out with them. So it turns out that I want to be around people that are seekers. And that's okay. The big book says that God will give us the fellowship that we crave. He will give us the fellowship we crave. And I crave to be around people that are positive. And they don't need to be positive all the time. They just need to be positive and then real. Because if you have alcoholism, there's going to be days when you're going to be positive, but you're going to be hurting. Do you mean we're not going to have it? And you just want to make sure that your circle of friends, not everybody's in the hospital at the same time. I want to make sure that when I'm down, Rob's not down. Or if Rob's down, that Jerry's not down. Or we don't want to all be in the same boat. So you got to be around people that are seekers. It's impossible. For me, it's virtually impossible to be around three of my support group and have all three be down at the same time. Even in a natural disaster, one of them are like, "Can you see God's work in this? This is unbelievable." These are the people I surround myself with. I want to be walking around talking about broken shoelaces and the Twin Towers fall down. And my friends are like, "This is going to be awesome when we get to this." Those are the guys I surround myself with. And gals, that's what I surround myself with. Because my whole life, Sean, I've always been a negative guy. I've always been the half glass type of guy. Especially when I was a half glass type of guy, I was always the guy that wanted to pour the rest into the glass. And I don't mean alcohol. I mean, I wanted to fix the situation. I never turned to God to be a full glass type of guy. I was a half glass type of guy, and then I knew that God needed my help to fill the rest of the glass. So that brings us to step 7, where we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. God resists the proud, and he gives grace to the humble. You know, the creator of the universe, the one that rescued me from myself, the one that pulled me up from my alcohol and my drug addiction, the one that enabled my family to kick down the door and pull me out of that dungeon that I had trapped myself in. He's not looking for me to be big-headed right now. He doesn't do his best works when I'm taking credit for anything. He's not looking over and going, "Way to go, Stevie B." He wants to fill me up when I'm an empty vessel. That's humility. You know, let me also say something like that. I'm proud that I'm doing the steps here, and I'm proud I'm a member of the West Side Men's Group. I really am. Nice. And I'm also proud that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. That doesn't mean I'm prideful. Don't confuse it. Humility is not thinking less about yourself. You don't have to walk around looking at your shoes. "Yes, I'm very humble. I think less about myself. Yeah, I'm practicing the gift of humility. I'm a loser. Yeah, I'm humble." That's not humble. Humility is not thinking less about yourself. It's thinking about yourself less. So if you see someone in the front of the room that's sharing the message and giving their time and going into the trenches and speaking at bars 6 days a week and doing all that stuff, and they have a good message because it's honed, because God has given them the message, that doesn't mean they're prideful. But it could be that they're just proud to be picked, to be chosen. If you're not proud to be chosen tonight, you're looking at humility the wrong way. We are chosen. The people inside this group are chosen tonight. There's a million people outside of Fort Lauderdale and Hollywood that are getting high right now. Maybe not getting high, but they don't know anything about wanting this thing. They need this thing. They don't know anything about wanting this thing. We've been chosen. It's okay to be proud. It's okay to be walking around and saying, "You know what? I'm sober today." The people that I like to follow, the guys and gals that I look at and I say, "Look at those people over there," they're not walking around with looking at their shoes. They're like, "Yeah, man, absolutely. That's right, West Side. That I just threw in at the end. That's not the symbol for the West Side. That was something I came up with. Humility is not thinking less about yourself, but thinking about yourself less. And listen, if you can't get the thing on humility because you're thinking about yourself all the time, you need to get a sponsee or four. You need to get it back into the trenches, regardless of how much time you have. You know, if you're not put... Let me just tell you how I practice humility. In every meeting that I attend, I'm giving out my phone number. Every meeting. Call me. I can't sponsor you, but call me. What can I do for you? Can you speak over at this event? Absolutely. Can you come serve at this event? Next Saturday, we got this big event, and Jerry asked me to come and serve there. Can you serve? Can you clean up? Can you fill up the garbage pails? Absolutely. Because I serve someone that already came to serve and was served. I'm not looking to be the top dog. And that's what humility is. Humility. To know that you could do something and not do it. Here's another thing. To do something you don't want to do. Because the payoff is going to be so much more when it comes to the kingdom. And this is the kingdom, brothers and sisters. This is it, right here. It's not something you do in your sixth year. It's something you do right now. If you're in your third month, it's something you do right now. If you're in your sixth year, it's something you do in your sixth year. If you're in your 39th year, it's something you do in your 39th year. What do they call that when you're in the army? Those marching orders. Our marching orders are for tonight. For tonight. You guys showed up in a room that's not all together. Tonight is comfortable, but sometimes it's not. You didn't come here because it's the easiest meeting in town. You got to rush in, you got to grab you. But this is where he put us tonight. And let me just throw another thing before we get right into the seventh step. If you don't have a sponsee, just ask yourself why. It's not because you don't have something to give, because every single person in here has something to give. What are you pretending not to know? Right, Joe? What are you pretending not to know? You know you got something to give. Put your hand out there. How can I help you? How can I be of service? Because you have to understand that the people that started the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't have years when they started sponsoring people. They had days. And that one of them had months. So it's not like something you need to do next year. It's something that we can do right now. So thinking about ourselves less. We're thinking about ourselves less when we're in sponsorship. We're helping people. We're taking the chairs down. You know, I never go to a meeting, and this is not, Stevie B's doing a good job. This is, I want to save my butt. I relapsed already once in my seventh year and almost died out there. I never go to a meeting and not see if there's something that I contribute to the cleanup part of that meeting. I'm not saying I'm the guy that does all the cleanup, but I do something. And I certainly never want to go to a meeting and leave the place worse than it was. And so those kind of things, and I'm sure that you guys would agree, this is stuff that we've done over the years. In the old days, we used to clean ashtrays. That was the most humbling job. When you had to clean the ashtrays and you don't smoke. You know that. And my sponsor loved that. He knew I was like anti-nicotine. I was like with a cigarette, with a thing. And he was like, he's like, Stevie, you're going to clean the ashtrays. I'm like, Jerry, I don't smoke. He's like, exactly. And I was a clean the ashtrays guy in Minnesota. That's what I did. And then through doing those works. And you hear me say it every week, and I'm going to say it one more time just to remind us. Because you do know that a lot of this stuff came from, you know, a couple of the books. And another book that came and that wrote the big book. Some of it anyway. And one of the words is that faith without works is dead. If you have faith and you're not doing anything, it dies. If you're on fire for the program, but you're not doing anything, what are you doing? It's not just about us staying sober, right, Eddie? It's not just about us staying sober. How many people over the years have we been involved with and been able to help and helped us? And then on the days when alcoholism hits like it did for me in the last 20 hours, when alcoholism hits, you know what God does? He has guys call me all the time. One of you guys had a guy call me from Boca today. And he said, in the middle of my thinking about myself and my issues and all this stuff, and he's like, can you talk to me about the sixth step? Out of nowhere today. He's like, can you help me with the sixth step? I'm about to share it with a sponsee. Can you help me with the sixth step? Immediately, you know, I was like worried about making a t-shirt at the store. Then I'm like, this t-shirt, whatever. And then a guy calls me like, can you share with me on the sixth step? It immediately takes you to a different plane. Can I share about the sixth step? You got a pen? You got a paper? I love that. And then all of a sudden you're at it. You know, you're back on the mountaintop. You're back doing what he intended us to do. Because what we do for work, at least for me, I need to do it. You know, of course, one of the character defects is sloth, and I certainly don't want to be slothful. You need to make money in order to survive. So I'm not saying we should be sitting around just talking about the big book and different things. But for me to focus on who I am as what I do has always been a big problem for me. But still, when I'm doing what I do, I still need to be content with what I'm doing. And a lot of times that's a juggling act for me, because I've kind of like want to spend all my time in studying the books around the big book, and I want to study all that. I love that. You know, to ask me something, you know, that just raises me up, and I love it. But tell me that I got to go cut 1,000 business cards, and I'm like, oh my, is this what my life is destined for? It's in those things. It's in those things. Those actually humbling places. In all of our workplaces, because I think one of the reasons they call it work, as far as I've been told, is it seems like it's work. I think that's why they're not calling it play. So I think that all of us are having issues with work, maybe even contractors. Are you guys having issues with work? I'm sure everybody's not. It's not the greatest thing you want to do, otherwise they would call that hobby. So when I'm at work, I have to constantly refocus myself. What's important? What's important? Who's important? Who's you are? Who are you? The seventh step is where we make the change in our attitude, which permits us with humility as a guide to move out of ourselves towards others, thinking about ourselves less, thinking about ourselves less. It is really saying to us that now we ought to be willing to try humility and seeking the removal of our other shortcomings. Last week we said we were entirely ready to have God remove all our defects of character, remember? Is anybody in on that? Is anybody ready to entirely have God remove these defects? I'm in. I'm entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. But when you do that, here comes the next part. We humbly ask Him to remove them. You see, being entirely ready to have God remove our defects is only the first part of the two-part miracle. What we don't talk enough about in Alcoholics Anonymous, as far as I'm concerned, is 6 and 7. 6 and 7, for me, changed my life. 3, 6, and 7 changed my life. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And in 6 and 7, I asked Him to help me to get closer to You. My Creator, I'm now willing that You should have all of me, good and bad. I'm now willing that You take away every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to yourself and to others. Please grant me the strength as I go from here to do Your bidding. Take away every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to You and others. Awesome. Just meditate on that for a half a second. And you do it with a humility when you're saying, my Creator, I am now willing that You should have all of me. I don't want to keep any of it. I trust that You will take all of it. I don't even know what some of them are. I don't even know what most of them are. But I'm sure willing that You take them. Defects. Shortcomings. I come humbly to Your throne. Take them. Now, that's the first part. The second part is, what are they? Not that you need to know what they are in this specific step, but it's good to know. It's good to know if you suffer from pride, anger, greed, gluttony, envy, lust, or sloth. Or if it's anything like me in my life, that what combination of those do I suffer from on a daily basis? I'm like, you know, go Big Mac number 4, exercise it. I got a lot of sins. I got a lot of stuff that I'm suffering from on a daily basis. Please remove it. I want to share something with you, and I'm not sure if the old timers are going to agree with me on this, but I want to tell you about a prayer that's helped change my life. It really has changed my life. And it goes like this. God, I'm so glad You're with me today. Please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad You're with me today. Please remove this bad thought from me. You know, when I can't identify my pagels, my pride, my anger, my greed, my gluttony, my envy, my lust, and my sloth, because I'm all wrapped up in it, God, please remove this from me. I'm so glad You're with me today. Please don't abandon me. Take this from me. I said I wasn't going to yell. I had to yell that one, though.
What does sloth mean?
Sloth is being lazy. Thank you for asking that. What does sloth mean? Being lazy. Slothful. I know nobody in this specific room suffers from that. But you know, my wife will tell you that I could be slothful. I could be slothful. And that's a sin. If it gets in the way of you going to work and you get out of work and then all of a sudden you're out of work and then you can't pay your bills, and it just perpetuates. Envy. I want what I have, but you know what? Then I also want what you have. Lust. Okay. I've mastered that one right there. I'm good. No, it's a daily thing. And it's not just lust for the opposite sex or the person that you're attracted to. It's not just lust for that. It's lust for stuff that you don't have also. It also can fall into envy. I work at a place where there's cars parked all around. Bugatti, $2 million. Ferrari, 1.5. Enzo. Maserati. All the... If I start walking my... licking my lips when I look at the Bugatti, that's lust. That guy falls into a thing. Now I want what I can't have instead of wanting what I do have. Greed. Gluttony. Wanting so much more than I can have and then wanting to put it all inside my body and inside my eyes. Gluttony is a tough one for me because I don't want one cookie. I want the entire box of cookies. And I don't want a quarter gallon. I want the whole gallon of milk. I want to do the whole thing. I want it all. I want to feel better now. I want now and now and now and I want more. That blocks me away from being in the sunlight of the spirit, because let me tell you, when you are eating all that cookies and milk, I'm not saying that you guys do that, but I'm just saying when I do it, and I'm doing all that, I'm not thinking about God. I'm thinking about me. Me, 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 me. I'm feeding me. Then all of a sudden I switch from humility to being about me. Now I'm thinking about myself more. So we got the pagels, pride, anger, gluttony, greed, envy, lust, and sloth. And then you got subcategories there. You got jealousy in there. You got hatred inside the anger. You got all these subcategories. You don't have enough time in the day to work on all this stuff. You can't work on this. It would be a full-time job for half of us. For me, it'd be a full-time job. So guess what I do? I come humbly and I say, God, remove these shortcomings. Please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Listen, anyone that wants to say that with me right now, just say with me, God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Listen, I know that that's simple. I know that that's not one of these ancient things where the scrolls opened up and people came down from the mountain with no shoes on and they're like, here's the prayer. But it works. Sean, it works. That prayer works. God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. It opens up the channel. It opens up the channel again. It gets you away from you. It gets you thinking on Him. Please remove this shortcoming. And you know what it does also? You know why I like to pray on my knees in the morning? I hear people in me, as soon as I say that I pray on my knees in the morning, there's always some guy that shares right after I share, I don't need to pray on my knees. The God of my understanding knows where I'm talking from. Always, every single time I say, I like to get on my knees in the morning and pray to God and ask Him to come into my life. Always in the next two shares, this guy. My God knows me where I'm at. Yeah, your God does know you where you're at. But isn't it incredible, an act of humility to get down on our knees when we're running the show all day long and we think we got it all covered and we're always thinking of ourselves for the 2 minutes to be on our knees and say, God, please take my day? That I go to the page 86, 87, and 88 in the big book, and I say, upon awakening, let us think about the 24 hours a day ahead, and I do it on my knees. Is that too much to ask to the creator of the universe that pulled me out of my alcoholic mire? I don't think so. So does He know that I'm praying to Him when I'm laying down? Absolutely. But do I know who did it for me when I'm laying down and I'm going like this? God, I like to be on my knees, on my face. This is what you did for me, and I want to just remind myself on who's running the show. It ain't Stevie B's show. You know, I constantly have this thing where after I talk, people always are thanking me and thanking me, thanking me. And it's great, and I appreciate that, and that's awesome. And I ask every one of my sponsees, regardless of how bad the speaker is or if the speaker's not exactly for us, to go up and thank the speaker, because that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. But any speaker that starts receiving that and thinking it's all about them has already missed the message of their message. I never, at least I don't want to ever get to the point where I'm like, yes, absolutely, bring it on. It's so fantastic. I'm motivated. As soon as we do that, one shot, what is that? Big shot, one shot, we're all shot. There's no big shots inside of Alcoholics Anonymous. And let me tell you something else, a revelation. There's no big shots in this world. In God's eyes, being a big shot is the worst sin. That's the worst sin. And it does has nothing to do with money. Because I know some people that are very wealthy and carry themselves with a serious humility. And I know people that use their money to do good. So not, it has nothing to do with that. It's how we carry ourselves. Whose do we think we are? Are we thinking about ourselves all the time? Or are we thinking about other people? How can I help you? How can I best serve you? Take away every single defect of character that separates me from you. We're good? You want to know why they just glance over the 6 and 7 step in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? You don't want to know why that it's only 2 paragraphs? You want to know why? Here's my theory. They were only sober 4 years, and they were a work in process when they wrote it. They knew it was important. They knew that there was the act of confession in all the religions, at least the ones that they were studying. They knew they had to share with another human being, and they knew they had to ask God to remove these defects and to come humbly, but they didn't understand the whole grasp of it until some of their friends that helped them write the big book started drinking again. And then they realized, you know what? In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we only made this 2 paragraphs, but it turns out that 6 and 7 is the entire deal of the program. And unless you go to a 6 and 7 meeting where someone really understands the magnitude of having God remove your defects of character, you're going to hear a lot of times in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm working on my defects. You're going to hear that all over. I'm working on my defects. How's that going for you? How is you working on your defects going for you? Because I was working on not hitting people for 35 years. I was like, I'm really working on not hitting you. Ding! I don't know where that came from. The first moment that I said, God, please remove this from me. I don't want to live like this anymore. I was in the parking lot over there at the Office Max. I just got into another fight. I was 3 months sober. My chain that my wife's family had just given me with this cross on it with emeralds. And I was just a 3-month sober crack addict right off of crack. And they gave this to me. And they said, Steve, we believe you're not going to sell this for crack. And I got into a fist fight in the parking lot, and it flew off my chain, and it was laying there in the middle of the circle that I was just fighting in the middle of the day in Office Max. And I drive back my car. I'm all shaking because I'm sober now, and I'm shaking, and I go to grab it, and it's not there. And now I have to go back to the scene. You know, I'm a really good guy at losing my temper. I'm not a good guy at going back and facing what I just did. So I got to go back to the scene. And I look down at the ground, and then the cross is laying there in the blacktop. And I felt something inside me that said, you can't live like this, and you can't follow me and say that you're going to live like this. You need to change. And I said, God, I can't change. I don't know how to keep my hands on the table. I don't know how to. Because listen, when I went to Office Max, I wasn't going there for a fight. I was going there for office paper. I didn't have a chip on my shoulder. I had, like, no fax paper. That's what I was there for. So I don't know. What I'm trying to tell you is I don't know when it's going to happen. When I'm working on my defects, it ain't good. You know, I'm pulling in, and I just got my car back, and, it was months I didn't have the car because I had a car accident, and they just gave me the car back, and I was probably in a good mood. And next thing I know, I'm pulling into the parking lot, and I was backing up, and I guess I didn't look into the rearview mirror because I had one of those backup systems on my car. And I probably wasn't looking because I always just rely on the backup system. They go beep, beep. And so I'm backing it up and I hear beep, beep. But then I heard boom. And I didn't hit the guy. The guy didn't like that I was backing up fast and he hit my car just to let me know that I was back, that I could have hit him. And he was probably right. I was probably backing up without looking at him. But I didn't like it. And the next thing you know, I'm fist fight. That's how working on my defects of character, that's how good it was working. And I was in a program with Joe where they took apart my defects of character and they put I was in these training processes and they dissected us and we went to these process, other processes and super processes and process on top of that. I'm still whacking people in the parking lot of Office Max. All the dissecting of my psyche and the inner workings and feeling good about myself and telling people I love them and then loving me doesn't help. Doesn't work. It doesn't work, Jimmy. You can never make a leopard a tiger. It doesn't work. can't do it. A leopard is always going to be a leopard. Can't change his spots. You know what I found out, though? Guess what I found out? God can remove the spots. This seventh step is unbelievable. But I don't believe in the fourth year of sobriety when they were doing all that work and they were just trying to stay sober that they understood the magnitude of what God can do in a surrendered life. I knew they knew about it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not certainly not putting Bill W. down and Ebby and Bill Dodson and Bob. I'm not putting those guys were awesome. But you know, how many people with 4 years of sobriety that know the entire magnitude of what turning your life and your will over and then constantly turning it over to Him? Not all of us get that. They didn't have meetings like this. They had like a guy with one tooth and a guy that was doing good and a guy, and they were going around the circle, and they didn't have the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous when they wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You understand? So they didn't get the magnitude of what 6 and 7 can do in our lives. That you really can have a new freedom and a new happiness once you ask Him to remove your shortcomings. And here's the other thing. You don't even need to know what your shortcomings are. The pagels that I told you about tonight, that's just bonus if you know what they are. Oh, that absolutely. You can identify it. So when you're walking down the street and all of a sudden you're jealous. What my friend told me tonight, oh no, my sponsor told me tonight, when I told him that some people were giving me some guff about me speaking from the podium a lot, you know what he told me? I didn't even know this. He told me jealousy is a natural emotion. I didn't even know it was a natural emotion. I thought it was totally whack, you know, like when you're totally off. Because I had always put it in a different category. It turns out it's a subcategory of envy. I got that. I got jealousy. I got it all the time. I didn't identify it. Turns out I don't need to actually identify it. I just have to know that it's not me that's working on it. Wow. Listen to this. The whole emphasis. Now, after they've been doing this for 15 years, and they have to have the 12 and 12, because you can't go to the big book for the seven-step magic. It's one paragraph. You do the creator prayer, and then guess what it says? You've now completed step 7. They didn't really get it. I can't say that. You know, Bill, I'm not, you know, I'm saying you didn't know what was going on. But the one paragraph, now you've completed step 7. Step 7 to me is an ongoing process. But after 15 years of it working, they had the 12 and 12. And now this is what they write, Rob. Listen to this. Now that they have 15 years, and some of the guys that they were writing the book with actually drink, and some of them come back and then they drink again. Now listen what they write. Pay attention. This is good. The glow on my book. I'm not sure if I'm having a spiritual awakening or if it's... The whole emphasis of step 7 is humility. It is really saying that we ought to be willing to try humility and seek in the removal of our shortcomings, just as we did when we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and came to believe that God, rather than ourselves, could restore us to sanity. If that degree of humility could enable us to find the grace, remember I said to you in the beginning of the meeting that God resists the proud, but He gives grace to the humble? Would you like to have a little grace from God? I certainly would. Eric C., you like a little grace from God? I like grace from God. I like a little grace from God. I certainly don't want Him to be resisting me. I have enough in resistance in myself. I get in my own way all the time. I don't want it to be God resisting me. I'm already resisting me. I want to make sure that the channel is open. So listen, if that degree of humility could enable us to find the grace by which such a deadly obsession could be banished, then there must be hope of the same result respecting any other problem we could possibly have. Wow. That's heavy right there, right? You'd be like, where's that from? That's from the 12 and 12. You have a 12 and 12? I hope so. Are you using the 12 and 12? I hope you are. Because the 12 and 12, although it's not the only textbook, there's some stuff in the 12 and 12, no disrespect, is a little wacky to me. You know, I can see that some of the stuff has been, man got involved. You know, where the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I really feel, is totally inspired. And there's not one line in the entire 164 pages that I just don't hang on and I'm just like, wow. The 12 and 12, to me, is actually more of a textbook that says, this is what we've been doing that's working, and this is not what we've been doing that's not working. And I think some of the stuff is amazing in there, but I don't feel it's inspired in my life. But then I'll come to a paragraph like that, and I'll be like, wow, that's some heavy stuff right there. The whole idea behind it is humility. Unless I have humility, I can't work the seventh step. And yet, unless I work the seventh step, I'm not going to have humility. Whew. It's deep. That's like some, that's eclectic stuff. That's like from the 70s. That's like, whoo. So get the book, digest it, get with a sponsor, get on your knees. Don't be too big to be humble. Don't misunderstand that humility, once again, is not about thinking of yourself, thinking that you're less, but just thinking about yourself less. If you don't have a sponsor, get one or four. Get in there. Get into the trenches again. Get the books out. Find out what they were reading when they wrote these books. You know, there's all this information what they were reading during that time. Sermon on the Mount, Twice Born Men, a variety of religious experiences, of course, the Bible. Don't be afraid to get in there. Remember, Rudy, when we were reading Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount? Don't be afraid to get in there and find out where they got all this stuff. If you don't believe me, find out where they read it from. If you want to see where it says that God resists the proud, find out where it came from. Want to be the Good Samaritan? Find out where that line came from. Faith without works is dead? Find out where it came from. I mean, there's nothing that's going to... Listen, if you're anything like that, let me just put it like this, and then I'm going to end. When I relapsed, and a friend of mine said to me, try this thing, this pill. I was already 32. I was sober 7 years. I hadn't had a drink in my system, let alone this pill, this club pill, that I was going to try when I was 32 years old. And he's like, try this pill. And the way that we do it is we drink a couple shots and then we put the pill under our tongue and he gave me some hokey pokus. You know what I said to him? You know what I said to him? Okay, that sounds like a good idea. You know what I mean? It sounded like a good idea. Another friend of me said, listen, we made this stuff in the bathtub. We took some household chemicals. We mixed it up in the bathtub. We think you should try it. You know what I said? Okay. I tried it. Stuff that was from household chemicals that they mixed up in a bathtub, and then it was in a clear liquid. And they're like, "Here, try this." I'm like, "Okay, I'll try it." And when I came back into the program, they were like, "Listen, why don't you find out some of the books that were behind the big book and all this stuff?" And I'm like, "Are you kidding me? You know I'm not going to go there." So challenge yourself, get deeper into it. There's this amazing program behind the program. And if people are telling you because you have enthusiasm and that you're proud to be an Alcoholics Anonymous, that you're prideful, if one person tells you that, that doesn't mean it's true. If a whole series of your support group tells you, then it's almost always going to be true. But a lot of people mistake the excitement that we have for our home groups, the excitement that we have for our God, the excitement that we have for our sobriety as being grandiose. I'm not grandiose. And a lot of my friends aren't going, you know what we are? Is we're excited. We're saved. We're excited. We're seekers. I'll see you guys next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Steve. We are out of time, but there is always time for a burning desire. This means you think on yourself or someone else. Pick up a drink and share it now.